Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky, Kendrick Nunn says Darvin Ham is looking good. What does that mean for the Lakers going forward? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making, Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube, Andy, is where you go to see the podcast. You can see us make the podcast. It's high art. And when you're done with all of those things, then you go and make another Locked On podcast, your second. It's us on audio, and then maybe audio and YouTube, or YouTube and audio, and then, you know, carry on.
After you've left a five-star review, obviously. Right.
And maybe listened again and gone back and listened to some older ones. You know, just make sure you didn't miss anything. So we got some really great feedback on, what was it, Tuesday's episode? Kind of recapping where the Lakers stood with the Russell Westbrook option tree that we're going to get into. Great comments from the Locked On Lakers YouTube page, which we appreciate. We're going to really be using those a lot. So if you want to be part of the show, that's a great way to do it. Leave us comments there. Leave us questions. Leave them on the iTunes show page and all that. So we're going to get to those things. There was, Andy, one item that we didn't get to for yesterday out of the Darvin Ham and Patrick Beverley press conference. And that was some news on Kendrick Nunn. Darvin Ham was asked about Nunn and how he's looking and how he's doing. And Darvin said this: I just watched Kendrick Nunn have a great workout. He has been having great workouts since last month. He's looked great. He's out there doing individual workouts, going crazy in the weight room. We've had some individual combo workouts, but he looked great. He looked great. It's great. It's like it's a breath of fresh air from him as well. We're going to have a damn good team. Darvin thinks he looks great, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, look, Darvin has been very much into messaging, and I don't say that with any type of, you know, suspicion or anything like that. I think he's very, this is a team that quite frankly needs messaging. You know, there needs to be obviously results, and there needs to be dedication. There needs to be all sorts of stuff. But I think it's fair to say the narrative around this team could use some shifting.
The mood has not been light.
Right. And I think Darvin, who is very good at this stuff, period, has made a point of shifting just the perception of this team moving forward. What I also thought was interesting about this, though, in terms of talking up Kendrick Nunn and how well he's played in these practices and stuff like that. Also, for what it's worth, Austin Reeves, Thomas Bryant, there have been a lot of reports about those guys in workouts absolutely killing it. And Lonnie Walker
put on what, like 10, 15 pounds or so?
Well, that's the standard in the offseason. Right. Everybody puts on 10 to 15 pounds of muscle.
Whether somebody out there wants to do the Austin Reeves treatment that like Andrew Wiggins got,
yeah,
you know, the flexing Austin Reeves, that is a worthy use of your time between now and the opening of camp.
By the way, speaking of 10 to 15 pounds of muscle, I have no idea if this is just additional muscle or
not me.
No, the way the guy looks. Period. Mm-hmm. But there's that Instagram video that Russ put out of himself while out on a boat somewhere like that. He's grooving to some music and
he's the king of the
shirtless.
World.
Dude is absolutely shredded. Like I have no idea what this means for Russ's play on the court this year, his ability to blend in better for what Darvin Ham wants, his ability to blend better with LeBron and AD. All I know is that dude looks incredible.
The list of criticisms for Russ and concerns is long. Fitness is not one.
I'm saying, even by Russ standards, he looks incredible. he may be another guy who put on the standard 10 to 15 pounds of offseason muscle, but there had been reports, Jovan Buha, among others, that Kendrick Nunn's ramping up has gone slower than hoped for, expected, that sort of thing, that he still was not playing 5-on-5 workouts. And Kendrick Nunn reacted on Twitter and said, "You learn new things about yourself every day on social media," crying emoji. "That's why I barely be on here." I guess questioning face emoji, two of them. To be fair to Jovan and anybody who is Jovan's sources on this stuff, sources for other reporters when it comes to Kendrick Nunn and that, I understand why he could take umbrage. He's also coming off what seems to be the worst bone bruise in the history of sports, the history of bone bruises, the history of bruises, the history of bones. So
Darvin didn't say he's, you know, oh yeah, he's running 5-on-5. He's doing all this stuff. He said he's been doing individual workouts, killing it in the weight room and all that kind of stuff. You know, guys play 5-on-5. I know it's the off season. I know it's like, but they are doing group workouts. They're playing 5-on-5. They're doing all that kind of stuff at this part of the year. And, you know, it is very, it doesn't seem like Nunn is at that point yet where he is doing that kind of stuff. I don't know what he's supposed to be doing. It's just one of those, and I don't know if like this would be considered slow. I don't know if this would be considered behind. I do know the Lakers are going to be monumentally careful with him going into camp for, you know, for reasons that we've outlined. He is really important to what they're trying to do. He is, you know, arguably their best free agent signing in a lot of ways. You know, when you think about guys who didn't play for this team last year, who will be on this team this year, he's their best guy, I think. And so, you know, the Lakers are going to be really careful in making sure that works. But it's one of those deals that until you see that he's on the floor playing 5-on-5, doing everything normal, that there are no restrictions, that he came back and practiced consecutive days and all this stuff, you're just going to wonder, is it going to work? Like shredding it in the weight room. People don't understand, I think, too. Like a guy can do these NBA workouts, which look for like you and me and normal people would put us on the floor. Like how can you do an NBA workout if your knee is still bugging you? The gap between like what these guys need to be able to do and what you and I and, you know, John Q listener have to do is huge. So they can walk around, they can jump, they can, until he can play 5-on-5, and we have the video, people are going to worry that he can't play 5-on-5. And I think that's fair.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've said before, and we are a long way from this, but him being out the entire first season as a mid-level exception guy and the prime, you know, the primary offseason signing, it reminded me of, you know, about 17 years ago, when the Lakers brought in Aaron McKee as their mid-level exception guy, and he played like 7 games over 2 years. Again, we are nowhere near that yet, but I'd be lying if I said I'm not worried about shades of Aaron McKee.
But it matters too, because like in part of, you know, this, it's not just for the Lakers. I mean, there are still a lot of trade scenarios out there where Kendrick Nunn's $5 million is included in that. And yeah, unlike Russell Westbrook, teams acquiring Kendrick Nunn would be interested in Kendrick Nunn, like in how he might help them improve their team, how he might do something, you know, whatever. And as a guy that they might be interested in being able to keep going forward after this season, it's important that he can show that he's healthy as training camp begins and all this other stuff. So there's more to it than just the sort of impact on the Lakers and their rotation, which by the way, is monumentally important.
Well, plus, I mean, from his perspective, he's 27 years old, entering his prime, looking for, you know, prime years paydays. He's not going to get that if he spent the last 2 years unable to stay on the court. It's also, too, before we get into some of these questions from the YouTube section, Kendrick Nunn being available and playing like he did in Miami, where second year, even with some defensive issues that took him in out of the rotation, offensively, he took some pretty notable steps forward and could definitely help this team. If he's available, he creates some interesting questions, Brian, for the rotation and you know, available playing time for the slew of guards.
And this is related to some degree to some of the scenarios about who might come back in a potential Utah deal, which is stuff that that people mentioned a lot. And so let's do that next, because you're right. It you know, Kendrick Nunn's availability, which is, I think, sort of one of these low key things that doesn't get discussed enough with the Lakers, is significant. So we'll talk about that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar Puffs. They are sweeping the nation, and there is a new flavor, cookie dough chunk puffs. They've got a light, chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, the real stuff. And as always, covered in 100% real chocolate. All the joy is just the sense memory that you will experience of eating cookie dough as a child without the hassle of making it, or the sense memory of watching your parents angrily clean it up, already regretting that they made this for you as a kid. Plus, unlike cookie dough, it's healthy for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs, only 160 calories, and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them, the collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently. The good stuff, tons of health benefits. Order a box for you or for the family. Perfect treat. Ditch the calories, ditch the fat, ditch the sugar. Grab yourself a Built Bar. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON15, get 15% off your order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON15, 15% off at built.com.
So we actually, we got a lot of, I know we're going to get into this stuff from, you know, comments that were left on a Tuesday show, reacting to the Donovan Mitchell trade and what that leaves for the Lakers. We also got a lot of great stuff for Wednesday show about the Pat Bev, Russell Westbrook press conference day, Russ's presence at the Pat Bev introductory press conference. So we're that's going to be really our next show, I think. So again, keep feeding us great comments, great questions, and you know, you can really be part of the show and make it interactive as we get into training camp. You mentioned before, though, we get into some of these comments from Tuesday, talking about the Utah dynamics and all that, the impact on of Kendrick Nunn on the rotation. We talked, you know, Darvin Ham talked about whether or not guys like Beverly and Westbrook could play together, but like Nunn's availability, especially when you start talking about guys like Austin Reeves and whatever, it really makes a fascinating, fascinating set of choices that Darvin's going to have in front of him this year.
Yeah. And let's just say from the top, these are good problems to have. Kendrick Nunn being available, playing well, even if it creates some decisions for Darvin Ham, just want to make sure people don't misunderstand. This is a positive.
Oh, it's a very positive. And it's also not like we're not trying to make Darvin into an all-star. I'm sorry, Kendrick Nunn into an all-star. It's just he's good. He's a good player. They don't have a ton of those guys.
He can be impactful as a scorer, as a spot-up three-point shooter, which he improved a lot in his second year in Miami. He's also someone really effective in transition. He was actually a big key in his second year in Miami when the Heat looked to run, and that's something the Lakers want to do. But that being said, there's a redundancy going on. When the Lakers, four of the five guards slated to be in the rotation, Kendrick Nunn, Lonnie Walker IV, Russell Westbrook, Patrick Beverley, 6'4 or below. Kendrick Nunn's 6'2. Lonnie Walker is the tallest at 6'4. Maybe the most athletic, you know, at this stage of Russ's career. He's probably the longest of all of them, but he is also, to put it generously, a question mark defensively. And then you've got Austin Reeves as a 6'5 guard who you could maybe look to play some at the three, but he's a bit undersized there. And depending on how Troy Brown plays,
not the yoked out version we were talking about in the first segment, though, Andy. That guy can guard anybody.
Well, but the problem is he didn't actually add any muscle to the end of his arms, like to his fingers. He needed to add muscles to his fingertips just to stretch out how much further he could go. And, you know, if Troy Brown is playing well, that extra inch of length could make a big difference, you know, for a team that does not have a lot along the wings. So, you know, Patrick Beverley is the best defender and established outside shooter. Russ is the biggest name, and even with all the turbulence, he's the most talented of the guards they have. I think
at Austin least offensively Reeves, the most dynamic.
Yeah, and I think Austin Reeves is the most connective, and in certain respects the most balanced on both sides of the ball, although he still has stuff he needs to prove. But then you get into Nunn and Walker, and that's where I think really the redundancy starts to kick in. And if there becomes just an obvious need for time, you know, for time for Troy Brown out there, or maybe Juan Toscano-Anderson plays as much three or four, or LeBron starts playing kind of a pseudo three in certain lineups, where you can't slide Austin Reeves over there. You start wondering if last year's mid-level exception might end up sending this year's mid-level exception to the bench.
They
both clutch guys, Brian, by the way.
We lamented in great detail the inability of the Lakers to utilize THT in a way that they could get the most from that investment. They mismanaged just about everything that you could construct in that. And one of the things that made the Beverly deal a good one for the Lakers was not just the improvement in skill set and whatever, you know, the defense and the upgrade in shooting and all that. It's because nobody's really sure where THT even fit in their rotation. So their fourth highest paid player didn't have a clear path to get on the floor. That's not good. You absolutely right now, as this team is put together, have the same problem with Lonnie Walker. There is no clear path to playing time, like a 20 to 25 minute a night role.
Or Kendrick Nunn, I guess, if Lonnie Walker's out playing him.
I guess that's true. But, you know, at least on paper, Nunn's shooting, frankly, he's a better defender, even with less length. You know, he is better at it.
I think he is too. Inconsistent, but better.
Yeah, it's problematic, you know, that you don't have a setup, because I thought my initial starting lineup before the Beverly deal was Russ and Reeves in the backcourt.
Yep.
I think now Ham will try to make it Beverly and Westbrook with Reeves and Kendrick Nunn as the first guards off the bench. I don't know how you get 18 to 25 minutes for your most expensive free agent signing. And if that's the case, I'm not saying that anybody else that they would have gotten automatically would have been better, that you couldn't have run into trouble or whatever, but you certainly could have at the very least picked somebody who ticked boxes that you needed more than what Lonnie Walker was going to do.
Or been willing to offer second years for your mid-level exception guy, which maybe could have gotten them Bruce Brown. I don't think it would have gotten them Otto Porter Jr., because ultimately it seemed like Porter wanted to go to Toronto, in part because his wife is from there. And, you know,
happy wife.
But nonetheless, though, it would be disappointing if it ultimately comes out that you've got a redundant player with that mid-level exception that you landed on, again, beyond whatever clutch ties, breaking the tie because you weren't willing to go more than 1 year.
And we're not there yet. I don't like.
No, we're definitely not there.
I don't want to say like this is definitively happening, but the storm clouds are gathering in terms of how, and it's just it is. Some of this is it's a function of how difficult they made their own job based on how they put themselves trying to put the roster together because of the Westbrook trade. And so, it is a logjam. And then, you know, it's okay if Troy Brown doesn't play. It's okay if some of these other guys, you know, some of the one-year guys do or do not fit. You're throwing darts at that. When you only have one exception, you need to make sure that guy is in a position to be able to play.
And look, to be clear, there's always a chance that they could land on a reserve backcourt of Nunn and Walker with Reeves at the three, and or I guess Troy Brown at the three with Reeves not playing much. I don't picture that happening, but if all three of them, you know, on balance are more effective than Austin Reeves, so be it. But there is a path where the two of them could be in the backcourt together, and you've got your mid-level exception guys represented and everything's fine. It's just not a at least an obviously clear path,
right,
which is, if nothing else, intriguing.
And so, and it opens the door too to some of the reaction that we were getting on Tuesday show, because a lot of the Utah stuff is in the backcourt. And so one of the things, you know, like a guy like Mike Conley, Jordan Clarkson, you know, Bogdanovich obviously on the wing, Vanderbilt on the wing. It's interesting to see how those guys might fit. Conley being an accomplished guy who's also older, who's also really little, you know, to get to the theme that you had before. So let's turn to that. Let's turn to some of the questions and comments that we got off of Tuesday's show, and we'll do that next. There's also some dynamics that we didn't get into with the Indy deal. You want to save that?
Yeah, let's save it.
Okay. So, we'll look back to some of these comments that we didn't get or that we got on the Locked On Lakers YouTube page. One thing that people noted, because I had questioned whether or not the trade, the Beverly deal, indicated perhaps that Utah wasn't as interested in Westbrook because they didn't make a larger trade around it. And people in the comment section pointed out that a player like Beverly could only be traded in isolation, couldn't be part of a larger package for 60 days. So the Jazz didn't have the ability to say combine Beverly and Bogdanovich in a Westbrook deal. That would have been a violation, at least at this point. So thank you for people for pointing that out. I had forgotten that part of the whole deal. Does that make a difference, do you think, in how you evaluate whether or not the Lakers and the Jazz are any more likely to meet up on a deal now with whoever is left over?
I just think it's presumptive to read too much into it. They may have just also known we want THT. Let's figure out something for THT. We know the Lakers want Patrick Beverley. We know Patrick Beverley has been openly lobbying to join the Lakers. Let's figure this thing out right now.
THT is a good return for a 34-year-old, you know, 10-year veteran guard that we have no use for.
Right. And we can table the later. The later just may not involve the Lakers, right, but it always could have not involved the Lakers.
Well, that's, I think the biggest thing that people that you pointed out that I think is really important about what the Lakers lose out on by not being involved is this idea that, you know, yes, Utah could absolutely make another trade with Westbrook and all that that involves it, but they don't have to. They could sell off Bogdanovich to Phoenix. They could then take Jordan Clarkson and deliver him somewhere else and all these other things. And when you break down who's available for the Lakers, a lot of the comments that we got on the YouTube page, there were people talking about Jared Vanderbilt, for example, as a potential guy that the Lakers might want to acquire. Would he be worth adding the a first round pick to get? This from Razorface Live. If I'm the Lakers, I'm only giving up both picks in the Jazz deal if it gets Vanderbilt and Beasley. If any of the older players being included, it depends on how the salaries match. My best case scenario would be Russ and Nunn for Vanderbilt, Beasley, Bogdanovich, and Conley. The Jazz get do this to get off Conley's contract and get two firsts. You know, the Lakers get obviously quantity back and some quality. Would that be enough? Conley, Bogdanovich, Beasley, Vanderbilt. Do you think that's worth the both of those picks?
I
like Jared Vanderbilt a lot, but he is a role guy. Let's not be crazy in what he's a terrible shooter.
I mean, it's better. I mean, if nothing else, you're adding more variety to what you could be getting. You're adding more positional depth as opposed to just stockpiling even more guards. I think, and this is also with the caveat of we don't know that Indiana, A, is dead set committed to trading Miles Turner, although I think they're fairly interested in doing it because he's been on the block for like 3 years and they at least made a perfunctory attempt to get DeAndre Ayton. And even if they figured Phoenix would match that offer, you still don't do that if you're really that happy with Miles Turner, because there's always a chance that Phoenix would say, you know what, take him. And then you're kind of screwed. Mm-hmm. But there is always a chance that Indiana, A, may not be willing to move Miles Turner as gladly as people perceive, or B, that the Lakers can make the best offer for him. That being said, though, I think Miles Turner is the best player of anybody still attached to the Lakers, but also he's the guy that can make the biggest impact on both sides of the ball for them. You know, the
player in one player. When you talk about,
right,
you know, Bogdanović gives them shooting on the wing, which they badly need, but is a
bad
at best a neutral defender.
That's at his best, he's a neutral defender.
So you have to, you know, you have to consider that. And you know, I want to say more commentary on Conley here for a second before we go. You know, Vanderbilt gives you a lot of defense on the wing and a lot of activity, and does a lot of little things well, but cannot space the floor, like, at all. And so he limits you offensively in ways that may or may not be a problem. I'm a big fan of returning Jordan Clarkson to LA just for fun. You know, but Beasley and Clarkson are kind of the same guy.
But here's the thing, though. I feel like if you are taking on both Mike Conley and Jordan Clarkson's money, because I think it's at least a 50-50 chance, probably higher, Jordan Clarkson opts into the final year of his deal.
I would think so.
Around
you 14. Have to, at the very least, you have to plan that he will.
Right. You have to plan for that. And Mike Conley is $14 million on the 23-24 books, regardless, because mm-hmm. that's the guaranteed part of this. To me, if you're taking on both of those guys, you shouldn't have to include both picks.
Well, I think that's what Vanderbilt is for. Like, you're essentially sort of throwing that in for Vanderbilt, but I tend to agree with you.
I mean, you're doing a lot of book cleaning for Utah in that place. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Russell Westbrook, yes, that's a big amount of money to eventually pay to go away, but it's money that you will only pay for 1 year, as opposed to potentially having to pay $28 million to Conley and Clarkson and probably not wanting them to play because you're trying to tank, but you're going to end up having to pay them. Otherwise, what's the difference? You might as well do it only for 1 year with Russ as opposed to 2 years with those guys.
Right.
So we'll see. I mean, a big factor in why this ultimately may not have mattered is of any of the players we're talking about, Utah could at least conceivably be most interested in keeping Vanderbilt and Beasley.
Because I would think they traded Vanderbilt to keep him. Because yeah. he fits their timeline. I think he's 22 years old, 23, right. 23, I think, this season, or if he isn't already. So he fits the timeline. He's relatively inexpensive, is a great role guy on kind of a growing team. Somebody who will have utility for a good team. Played very well for Minnesota last year. So I just don't think that's a possibility. And part of the reason I just don't love a lot of these Utah combinations unless you can really save a lot of that draft capital, maybe even most.
But then
of
you start getting into, what are you going to do with one pick?
Right. That's why I still like the Indy deal. But here, this is from our friend Murali Balasubramanian. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote it out because he's got seven syllables. So I feel like I'm owed that. Because we talked, both of us are huge Mike Conley fans as like a person in the career that he's had, but mm-hmm. have some concern about potential fall off at, you know, going into his age 35 season. Conley has been a victim of recency bias, especially in last year's playoffs. He has led the league in defensive RPM in the last couple of years for point guards, higher than Chris Paul, is a reliable three-point shooter, this is true, and a level head and a terrific playoff experience. A good fit with LeBron, I dare say better than Buddy Hield, who nobody wants, including the Kings. So his contention, if the Lakers can get Bogey Conley and able to, say, get like Jared Vanderbilt for Russ and the two picks, he believes that puts the Lakers into that 4-5 tier. I went back and I looked, and Conley's metrics, certainly on defense and all that, you can see a little bit of fading here and there, but they're still good. And they're still way better than anything the Lakers had last year. He's not terrible. You know, he's definitely would extend the floor for them and whatever.
Sure.
But two questions then before we go, do you think we were being maybe a little too harsh on Conley? And then two, what do you do with another 6'1" guard or whatever? Because we'd spend a lot of time talking about how the Lakers are smaller. Presumably, Russ goes out the door. Now you're even smaller. Now you have three guys, like all basically 6'1". There are probably players you just can't put Mike Conley on that Russ could stand next to. You know, he's 170 pounds.
Right. Except the problem is Russ is just going to be standing. He's not actually going to be doing anything.
I guess that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think in the wash, I don't think when it's all said and done, Mike Conley presents any real issue with being worse defensively than Russell Westbrook, because he's a better defender.
Oh, he's way better. I'm just thinking about you have a trio of guards in Conley and
Beverly,
Pat Bev and Nunn, who are all what, 6'1"?
6'1", 6'2". Nunn, 6'2".
I mean, that's we.
I mean, sure, but I think Pat Beverly with Austin Reeves as your starting backcourt, Nunn or Walker with Mike Conley, I think you can find ways to make that work as a reserve backcourt. The biggest concern, though, I would have with Conley, though, even if you take into account those metrics that were pointed out to us, is he faded pretty badly in the playoffs. And I wonder if just, even if you look to limit his minutes some over the course of the season to keep him fresh for the playoffs, if he's just in a place now where the returns begin to diminish the longer the season goes on, because he's just at that age where you're going to be wearing down.
And the fall off is just the danger of fall off. And I worry about this with Beverly, who's had, you know, we haven't talked a lot about it. He's been pretty good when he plays, but he's missed a lot of games.
Yeah. It's because he plays so physically and he's got an injury.
And so, you know, Conley is up there too. So now the one thing I think that people liked about this Lakers offseason is they got so much younger. And obviously you're not getting that much older going from Conley to, you know, Westbrook to Conley.
No, but you're adding Bogdanovich in the scenario, who's older.
Yeah, it's just it's one of these weird things where and we'll go here, but like, it's not that these guys are bad players, because they're not. Bogdanovich is a perfectly good player and Conley is a good player, and like individually they could all help them, but it's kind of a weird fit. Yeah. It's not as clean as the Hield Turner scenario. It's just not.
It also just speaks to how the roster construction for the Lakers is. It's difficult to add to without just adding redundancy the way it's set up right now, which creates a very narrow path for what you can try to do to it to really tangibly improve.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get to more comments from reaction from the Pat Beverly Russell Westbrook dynamic that people left for Wednesday's show. We do have a few things that we want to talk about with the Pacers deal, at least that I want to talk about. We got some new fresh odds on getting into the playoffs that really illustrate the uphill climb the Lakers are up against in the Western Conference, just in terms of the amount of good teams that are there. And so, still lots to talk about. Make sure you're leaving comments on the YouTube page. On our iTunes show page, wherever you want to do it, at Cam Brothers on Twitter, communicate with us, be part of the show. We really want to do that, especially over the next few weeks heading into training camp. And we'll see everybody next time.